All right, this is a special meeting of the Pacifica National Board on April the 27th, 2012. I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'm going to ask for someone to please offer a motion to select someone who will chair this meeting.
This is Janice Lane York. I'd like to make a motion to elect Heather Gray, temporary chair for the purpose of today's meeting, and Kim Kaufman, temporary secretary for today's meeting.
Carolyn Burden, I'll second that.
Are there any objections? Point of information, is Kim Kaufman on the call? Kim, are you on the call? All right, if she's not on the call, then could we have a motion for someone else to serve as secretary?
I'd make a motion to have Janet Kay serve as temporary secretary if she has the capacity to do so.
Are there any objections?
From Janet.
Hearing none, we'll move forward. All right, Madam Secretary, could you please call the roll?
Yes. Brian Edwards Peekert, Jose Luis Fuentes, and Janet Coburn, I'm present, Margie Wilkinson, Rodrigo Argueta, Lydia Brazan, Kim Kaufman, Lawrence Rays, Adriana Kasanov, Hank Lamb, George Reiter,
here.
Richard Uzel, Carolyn Burden,
present.
Janet Coleman, Serene Roberts, Manijay Sabah,
present.
Jim Brown, Benito Diaz, Luzette King, Tony Norman, Heather Gray,
here.
Janice Lane Ewart,
present.
Okay, I have six present. That is myself, George Reiter, Carolyn Burden, Manijay Sabah, Heather Gray, and Janice Lane Ewart. Did somebody else just join the call?
Richard Uzel's here.
Richard Uzel.
I'm sorry, Madam Secretary, could you acknowledge there's Summer Reese is on the call?
Oh, and Summer Reese.
Present.
Summer Reese, your presence?
I am, thank you.
Thank you. I do want to mention, thank you so much, Janet. I do want to mention that there are a number of people who sent notices saying that they could not or would not be on the meeting, and that includes Rodrigo Argueta, Lawrence Reyes, Brian Edwards Peekert, Tony Norman, Serene Roberts, Janet Coleman. Who else here?
Hank Lamb.
Adriana Casanave, and I think also Benito Diaz. All right. So thank you. So we do have an agenda. I hope you have an agenda before you. We sent out two agendas. One is for the open session, and one is for the closed session at 5 o'clock today. Are there any objections to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move forward. The first item on the agenda is a report from Summer Reese, and she just sent us out her two-page written report, which we thank her for. So, Summer, we have 15 minutes for your report.
You are.
Question, do we have a question? Do we have a quorum?
We do not have a quorum.
We do not have a quorum?
No.
Okay.
All right, Summer, you're next on the agenda.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you. Okay, so I've sent you a 2-page report summarizing some of the major issues that we are facing at the moment. I think, as everyone is aware, the current crisis has inspired some fear and trepidation in our creditors. As everyone knows, we are an organization that has a significant amount of debt burden, but many of the organizations to whom we owe those debts have been working with us over a long period of time in addressing them. And unfortunately, with the present crisis, it seems to have hastened the desire of certain creditors to make sure that they are legally on record as being owed money. So we have had 2 lawsuits filed against us this month. We've only been served with one of them, but those 2 suits, one is from a firm from whom we had hired temporary employees, and it's a collections action, and the other is from FSRN, who formerly provided Free Speech Radio News to us. We have not yet been served with that suit, but I did have various other organizations notify me that we had been sued, so I anticipate we will be served with that soon enough, and I will notify the board when that occurs. We have also had a National Labor Relations Board complaint filed against the organization by the SAG-AFTRA unit in Washington, D.C. regarding certain actions at WPFW. That's a particularly unfortunate occurrence because I think, as you are all aware, on March 13th, I had flown to Washington, D.C. specifically to meet with the collective bargaining unit and the representatives of SAG-AFTRA to address concerns and grievances which they had at that time regarding local management decisions. And we had fully resolved all of those issues on the afternoon of March 13th in that we had addressed prior issues and had a schedule going forward to address their concerns. And at that point in time, they were not planning on filing any additional grievances, much less something as dramatic as an NLRB complaint, which is a significant escalation in any regard. It's, you know, equivalent to a lawsuit. I'm anticipating being scheduled for a video deposition in this case, and I know that they will be doing similar matters with other staff members. And this is, you know, very distressing, of course, because it's a serious action, and it was something which was completely unnecessary and was actually as of a month ago. So I will keep you posted as we move forward in, you know, responding to this matter. But, you know, for the record, we have had no NLRB complaints despite massive layoffs, union issues, et cetera, during the entire last 2 years. This is a dramatic escalation. Our audit work continues. We still have not received any reconciled books from KPFA as a unit, but finally they've agreed to turn over the underlying documentation, which was what we had asked a couple of months ago, which is, if you're not able to reconcile your own books, please allow accountants at the national office to do so. So finally, 2 months later and after postponing our audit, that is finally happening, and our staff here at National is reconciling the books based on documents such as bank records for KPFA. And hopefully we'll be able to get through that since it's, you know, very late into the schedule to finally be receiving underlying documents, but no reconciled books still. The audit did have to be postponed because of the lack of financial data from that unit, but currently the auditors are scheduled to come out in May to begin field work, so we will we'll keep you posted on how that is going. Our accounting staff is working very hard. There are very long hours to get through this work. We hired 2 people temporarily to work in accounting to assist them in completing the records for the audit. And so I'm glad to say all of that is moving along. because of the delay in our audit, it is unlikely that any CPB funds will be released this fiscal year, even if we had perfect compliance with the Communications Act. And that's because our fiscal year ends September 30th, and the late start of the audit, we don't anticipate that it'll be completely finished until sometime during the summer, and your final deadline for filing the 990 with the IRS and the audit is August 15th, which is only 6 weeks before the end of our fiscal year. So, and that has to be done before we file financial reports with CPB. So because of just all those pure scheduling issues, it is unlikely that CPB will release any funds this fiscal year. And at this point, since our funds have been withheld for well over a year and a half at this point, we may begin to lose those funds that have been withheld from the past. Additionally, the CPB is fully aware of all of the illegal meetings that have occurred by the board majority in the last 2 months, and that will further complicate matters in terms of the high level of scrutiny which we have been under for compliance with meeting notices. Our compliance officer is still working with the stations on regular meeting notice compliance quarterly, and we have some issues there as well still with the two East Coast stations, WBAI and WPFW, in terms of noticing all meetings properly. I have been working with the Office of the Inspector General of the CPB and have supplied significant documentation on accounting, meeting notice personnel, copyright issues regarding our compliance or lack thereof in those areas, and I anticipate continuing to work with counsel of the Inspector General's office over the next few weeks in terms of answering requests for data and information, and of course that's being shared with the radio division of CPB as well in terms of where it may impact on meeting notice requirements. We are still dealing with last year's fatally flawed 990 tax return, which failed to account for CPB funds, affiliates' income, and misclassified various revenue categories. Our audit firm and tax preparers have sent me the amended 990 just this past week for review, and I anticipate, by finish of that review this week and signing that amended return so that we can get it out to not only the IRS but the several states that require charitable solicitation registration and require our financials in order to be compliant. While all of this is going on, the CFO is currently on vacation in the Philippines and is not presently available, I think, to work on any of these matters. WBAI is still in an extremely precarious financial position. Its transmitter rent has not been paid for March or April. Our attorney who handles matters with ESB was not available this week because of the spring vacation, but we anticipate that he will be back this coming week. But even in terms of making payment arrangements with Empire State, on the tower rent, obviously we have to have money to work with, and currently WBAI is approximately $250,000 in arrears on expenses, and both WBAI and WPFW were unable to meet their respective payroll obligations this week or to fund their health care obligations, which are tied to KPFT and the national office as well in terms of being on the same benefits plan. So KPFA and KPFK have had to supply approximately, or will be supplying by early next week, approximately $85,000 to meet the payroll and health care obligations of the East Coast stations and the national office, which continues not to receive shared services from the two East Coast stations because they don't have them. KPFA, I believe, this last week liquidated approximately $100,000 in stock, which is part of where that money is coming from as well. So, as I said, work on the audit is continuing apace. And let's see, what else? In terms of communications, I've covered that. I'm happy to take questions from everyone. I have spoken with our FCC counsel about our low power situation at KPFT, and I know there's been a lot of confusion going out on various lists as to what it means and what position does this put us in. And what I've been informed is that we can continue to apply for low power waivers and that the FCC will most likely continue to grant them. However, because we are in license renewal, some other party may object because we don't appear to be using our full power for the license that we are rated at. And so a filing can be made objecting to renewing our license at this power level because we are not, in fact, utilizing it. And the FCC can issue an order to show cause as to why it should not downgrade our license, and then we would have to respond. So although we can continue to receive waivers, it puts the license in a precarious position, so it should not be extended any further than necessary. And I do believe organizationally that the replacement of the transmitter in Texas needs to become a priority. It's imperative, if we do not want to have the signal downgraded, that we are proactive in replacing our equipment appropriately so that we can broadcast at our full power. And in dealing with all of these issues, I am working here, look, based on what's going on financially with our various units, the serious nature of how people are interpreting the present actions of the board and what has gone on during the last month and a half, what we will do after a hopefully positive court ruling to address our operations on an emergency basis so that, in fact, we are able to continue operations and not have to, have some catastrophic consequence occur. And I believe those things are quite possible. I would appreciate being able to work with the board on the development and implementation of such a plan, but I'm working on the bare bones details of what should be done immediately in May to address our financial crisis so that it does not continue to get worse because of what's happened in the past few weeks.
All right. Thank you so much, Summer.
Thank you.
We'll take questions if people have questions of Summer.
Madam Chair, before you do that, I believe that someone else may have joined the call based on the number of people that have dialed in and wanted to give someone an opportunity to identify themselves if necessary.
Oh, thank you. Is there somebody else who came on the call just recently? All right, so thank you for that, Janice. Perhaps they'll identify themselves later. Questions of Summer?
Yeah, I have a question. This is George.
Would somebody please check to see how many people are on the call? If you have people who are on the call and announcing themselves, at least we know how many people are on the call. Thank you.
Yes,
I can check too. It's #4, Monica. Excuse me.
Janet K. for the stack for some.
Janet K. George, please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, what the board's actions and subsequent developments in the last month and a half that caused the people at PFW, the people being the union bargaining committee, to, I gather, abrogate an agreement they made with you and file an NLRB complaint?
Yes, what appears to have happened, because if you read the NLRB complaint, they leave out entirely the month of March, which is when we were resolving these issues. There were certain actions taken previously by the GM there, the interim GM, and I had addressed those actions. We were resolving them, and the day that I met with the union, yes, we had an agreement, among other things, the staff, which has been working at three-quarters pay for a very extended period of time. Had been promised by a brand new IGM that their salaries would be put back to full pay without any consideration as to how that would be done when the station is failing to pay its health care obligations, much less any central services. And as I usually do when I sit down with employees to explain what's happening at their unit, is we discuss the financials with all the members of the collective bargaining unit, most of whom were there that day, and the representatives of the union in terms of where the station was really at financially. And at the time, it was broadcasting at 11% of power, and there have been improvements made there by bringing in some outside engineers who have fixed some of those problems. So the station is operating at a better power level. And what we discussed was that we would have a schedule going forward based on the station meeting some objective criteria of broadcasting at closer to full power, actually paying its health care obligations monthly, actually contributing something to central services, and that if all of these, and having a successful May fund drive, and if these criteria could be met, we would come back and readdress that you know, full salary issue. And we had full agreement, and no grievances were being filed, and certainly nothing as drastic as an NLRB complaint. And it would appear, since the organization's majority on the board took its actions on March 13th, that subsequent actions occurred at Washington, D.C., at WPFW, where further violations of the contract were engaged in by the IGM and possibly ratified by the board chair or, you know, those purporting to be acting as IEDs, and that has caused the union now to escalate completely past filing another grievance and straight to the National Labor Relations Board, something that has not happened during my entire tenure as ED or IED. We have never had an NLRB complaint filed, so this is dramatic to me in terms of the escalation, and yes, it seems to have completely has to do with actions that were taken that have sort of vitiated all of the agreements that we had made with the union. And I feel like, you know, everything was fine on the 13th, and now we're facing yet another legal, you know, very serious legal situation here. And the complaint itself references the prior actions that we were resolving and then a whole series of actions that occurred during April that I, you know, was not able to mitigate or stop because of what's happened with the board majority's actions.
Can you give us an example of some of that?
It would appear that certain staff members were moved from being in union positions to management positions, and other staff members were moved from management positions to union positions without engaging the union, which is required in the collective bargaining agreement. So essentially, direct bargaining with employees without regard to the contract and what's required there. So just complete violations of the union contract in regard to relationships and interactions with employees and movement between management and union positions. And all of that appears to have occurred during April.
Can we get a copy of an NLRB?
I didn't attach them to my report, but I am going to send to the board everything today that I've gotten in here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much. Mona J. And then I have Mona J. Carroll and then Janet King. Mona J.
Richard to the stack.
I'm Richard. Mona J. I'm not hearing her, so we'll go to Carolyn. Carolyn?
Sorry to pass with me.
No problem. Go ahead, Mona J. Go ahead.
My question was answered. Thank you.
Carolyn.
Thank you.
Carolyn?
Oh, yes, thank you. George asked most of what I was asking, and since you report, I assume we'll get the rest. But is the union aware of the fact that the putative chair was not legally entitled to bargain for WPFW?
Well, most of their allegations are against the IGM. The problem is the putative chair, I believe, either ratified those actions or failed to stop them from occurring. In either case, where we were at previously with the union is their discontent with the actions of the IGM had caused them to want solely to deal with the executive director. And when that person, when they were dealing with me, we resolved all the actions. So all these things have occurred afterwards. I can't tell from the complaint itself whether they were ratified by the putative chair or not, but they certainly have occurred since that since those actions were taken by her to at least allow the IGM to continue forward doing these things.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I have one more question.
Go ahead.
All right, thank you. Would you mind
getting on the stack again?
No problem.
Janet Kay and then Richard and Carol.
Good afternoon. This is Lizette.
Oh, wonderful, Lizette. Thank you for joining us. Janet Kay.
Yes, hi. So I was wondering if you would, Ms. Summer, would report about the situation regarding GMs, IGMs at KPFA and KPFK.
Currently, Richard Price is still performing double duty as IGM at both KPFA and KPFK. I have not seen any action by the obviously, the present board majority has installed someone that they are reputedly calling the interim executive director, who is the former manager at KPFK, Bernard Duncan. I am not aware that they have made any attempts to fill the permanent position at KPFA. Certainly I've received no reports back to that effect. And at this time, and I hope after, you know, a positive ruling by the court, then I anticipate being able to fill that position virtually immediately, as all we were waiting for was additional information on those candidates. In the meantime, things have remained as they were with Mr. Perovsky being IGM at both stations. And to my knowledge, the KPFK LSB, I think, has postponed its meeting again in terms of beginning its permanent general manager search process.
All right, thank you so much. Richard. Richard, are you there?
I'm sorry, I was coming off.
No problem.
Okay, I'd like to thank the executive director for her hard work in the face of difficult times. And thank you for those two years without any kind of legal problems.
Thank you.
What is the cause of the current delay in the audit?
The substantial cause was the complete failure and or refusal to turn over reconciled books from KPFA for 18 months. And as I was discussing it with our accountants, we all recalled that last year, in fact, KPFA didn't turn them over on a monthly basis then either. They were all rushed through with a one-year reconciliation at the end because the audit last year was also held up by KPFA's books. What has happened is the books still haven't been reconciled, so they haven't turned over reconciled books. They've just finally, after 2 months of back and forth trying to get this stuff, have agreed to turn over the underlying documentation, which is what we asked for in February. If you can't reconcile your own books, then please give all of the actual documents and information to our accountants, and they will reconcile them for you. And that's what's happening now, is finally the bank statements and the various documents. We're still waiting on credit card statements. And I have alerted our accountants to, you know, if there are any anomalies or things that still fail to reconcile between various systems, to make note of those things so that we can, you know, bore down into them. I don't know that we have yet ascertained whether cash from events income has properly been booked or not, even properly deposited, since we're not dealing with booked items. We're dealing with, does it show up on the bank accounts? So I hope to have a better idea of that by next week in terms of where we're really at, and, you know, does that cash show up in the system? But it's been a complete failure to turn over any reconciled books whatsoever from the station next door. And when I asked, have any reconciled books been turned over, I was told, no, I think they're still working on October of 2012. It's phenomenal. So our staff here is putting together those.
2012, 2 years ago. Well, let me ask you one other question, real quick. Why was that IRS 990 returned and that you had to resubmit it? Why was that the problem?
It failed to account for CPB grant income whatsoever and did not contain a Schedule B accounting for CPB income. It failed to account for revenue from the affiliates program, which generates CPB income is, you know, over $1 million. That wasn't accounted for in the schedules of the 990. It did not list affiliates income at all as revenue. It listed central services, which are essentially an intercompany transfer from one unit to another, as revenue, which they are not. There were just so many actual errors on the document of failing to properly categorize revenue or even to list it that it was completely useful, essentially. And I had to have accounting staff go ahead and essentially address all of those issues, and we've been working with the tax preparers at Armanino McKenna to make sure that the completed and amended 990 is actually correct so that we can use it and submit it to the various states that require it, as well as the IRS.
All right, thank you.
Real quickly, filing of that is the responsibility of the CFO, is that correct?
Well, the CFO prepared it last year. I was compelled to sign it, although it was not you know, I was compelled to sign something which was fatally flawed, or else the organization.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's quite all right.
Thank you.
The CFO's responsibility, of course.
Point of information, please.
Yes, who is that, Janet?
This is Jennifer Hewitt. I wanted to ask if we have a timer, and are we looking to keep to our time limitations on questions and responses during this meeting?
Actually, we're not, and we don't have a timer. So are you offering yourself?
No, Ellie.
This is Richard. This is Richard. Our time was it 90 seconds?
Yes. 90 seconds. Thank you.
On the questions and the answers?
We're almost finished with the executive director's report. So, okay. 90 seconds, yeah. And Carolyn is next. And Carolyn, I apologize. I should have let you ask your other question initially. So please ask your question, your additional question.
Well, that one I'm going to pass. I'm going to ask one based on the executive director's recent answer. Is it possible to give a ballpark figure of what this mess with the audit and the failure of the audit to get completed has cost us? Not what it will cost us in terms of, you know, future loss of money, but, I mean, temporary help and delays and all that.
Cost. I'll first of all deal with the 990. Failure to have an accurate 990 and having it delayed in terms of amendment. We incur fines. I believe it's 36 out of the 50 states require that you register as a charity. And even though we're only located in five signal areas, we have to register in every state where we could potentially receive a donation from. So you register in every state where it's required. So we're fined when things such as our financial reports are late. So we're incurring fines. The audit itself, besides fines that can be incurred with your charitable solicitation registration simply for being late in providing financial information, from the CPB perspective, and, you know, CPB has been working with us the entire time I have been in this position because of all of the sort of catastrophic failures prior to my tenure that they identified in their 2009-2010 audits. They can, in fact, not distribute the money that they've been holding to us. There's like a schedule. They start taking pieces of your money back because they have a certain budget that they have to work with, and they distribute it accordingly to different stations. I haven't gotten clarity from them yet because this is such a situation that we find ourselves in as to whether or not they are going to simply not give us the money that they've been holding, or if we're losing a percentage of that money. But clearly we're entering that territory where there may be complete loss of funding for certain periods because we are so very delayed in our compliance. And I will work, I mean, I'm talking to CPB weekly, so I will see what I can get back in terms of some clarity as to how that might actually work out. Potentially it could cost us $1 million. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, when you look at it, you know, how far will they ding you? I don't know yet, but we're talking
about
a significant amount of money here.
Time.
All right, thank you so much. I'd like to move on to the next item on the agenda unless there's another pressing question for Summer. All right, thank you. So the next item on the agenda, and I want to thank Summer for her report as well. Thank you so much, Summer, for your hard work.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate it.
The next item on the agenda is a motion being offered by Carolyn Bird, which is regarding the selection of corporate counsel for the Pacifica National Board. So, Carolyn, I'm going to ask you to read your motion or speak to your motion.
Go ahead, please. It's rather long, and I sent it out, but I will read it, if that's all right with you, or is that, you want the whole thing read?
Yes, please go ahead and read it, yes.
All right. Whereas approval of a candidate by a two-thirds majority of the PNB could ensure a candidate acceptable to enough of the board so that council could be assured of ongoing support, and whereas it is the responsibility of the entire board to interview, select, and approve the hiring of independent counsel without conflicts of interest or affiliations that will exacerbate existing frictions on the board, and whereas it is imperative that the board consider carefully, and that members exercise their duty of care as well as their fiduciary responsibility and the duty of loyalty in the matter of the hiring of any counsel going forward, and whereas no one officer or director should be and is not empowered to unilaterally engage or hire a legal counsel for the board whom the board members have not properly met and whose credentials the board has not approved of. Therefore, be it resolved that the PNB shall elect four members using single transferable voting to an ad hoc committee to solicit and accept applications to the position of Foundation Counsel for Pacifica Foundation Radio, with the solicitation to be posted on the Pacifica website and other appropriate venues within 5 days from when the committee is elected. And resumes and inquiries should be directed to a member of the committee, which shall report to the PNB as soon as at least 3 resumes have been received, with all resumes distributed to the entire board. And at least 2/3 of the entire board must agree to consider a candidate for an interview for the position. At a meeting at least 4 days following the receipt and distribution of at least 3 resumes. Furthermore, interviews of agreed upon candidates, at least 3, interviewed by the entire board, shall be scheduled for a PNB meeting noticed at least 5 days in advance and scheduled so as not to conflict with a PNB committee or task force or LFB meeting. Candidates must receive votes from 2/3 of the members of the PNB in order to be hired as Foundation Counsel. Excuse me. And finally, letters of reference to the agreed upon candidates shall be distributed to the board 4 days before the interview of each. And that is the end of the motion.
I'm
sorry, I didn't have the paragraph. I don't know if I should do that or not, but I did not. Yes.
I second that motion, and I'd like to ask a question. Richard.
Go ahead, Richard.
What is the difference between the corporate counsel and a counsel that might be hired to speak on a specific matter to a...
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. A foundation counsel has to be...
It's not necessarily the same, is it?
Well, temporarily, I should think anyone brought in to speak on a foundation matter should have some vetting and approval by the entire board, even if they're not hired with resumes and interviews and all that. If that were temporary, like a one-day or one-week thing. But this talks about long-term permanent foundation counsel.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to motivate your motion?
Yes, thank you, I would. My purpose was to avoid what happened last time. The board is closely split, and 1 or 2 votes made such dissension that Foundation Counsel could not have approval of all of his advice, which stymied us and counsel. So we need to have a counsel that at least 2/3 of the board approve of. It may take a little longer, but if we can agree on that, I think that we can solve an awful lot of problems and not have counsel having advice rejected by 1 or 2 votes by an accident of attendance. So that was the purpose. Now, I must say, when this was first brought up, Brian Edwards' teacher said he agreed with the motion except for one change, and I'm sorry he's not here to make that one change, whatever that was. I have no idea what he was talking about because we haven't communicated. But I think the heart of this is that 2/3 of the board must vet and agree and vote on any entire board, not just a simple majority, as some people think is proper. So I think that's all I need to say. If anyone has questions about what else that meant, please let me know.
All right. Thank you.
Janice, so, back.
Discussion. Okay, Janice. Go ahead, Janice.
I'd like to serve as the second to motivate the motion that's been presented by Carolyn. And I'll just briefly speak to the elements of the motion allowing for greater confidence in the overall board's ability to govern along the practices of excellence that have been identified by many national and international agencies that deal with good governance. It brings into play the ability for
groups of individuals to work more closely with each other in alignment of what's best for the overall organization. And possibly in the event that there's some minor hurdles that need to be addressed in coming to a final conclusion, with a two-thirds vote, there's more probability that we could find a compromise in the best interest of governing the organization fairly and in line with best practices.
All right. Thank you so much, Janice. Any other comments? Any further discussion about this motion?
Janet, when everybody else is finished, Carolyn again.
Okay. Janet, go ahead.
Janet, so, and then Carolyn. Yes. I'm wondering about how to deal with a council or the need for a council until a hiring is happening, assuming that this process is in place. What happens in the interim if there's a need?
So, Carolyn, could you answer that or anyone else?
Well, I know what should happen. We should get on this immediately, like last week. But what has happened is I think a lot of members of the board and the majority faction don't understand what it means to have foundation counsel who is neutral and not aligned with a faction. At the moment, the majority has gone through the motions of pretending to hire foundation counsel, but it really wasn't done correctly, according to the bylaws or any other laws that I can find. And I think it's just a question of ignorance, and I'm hoping that a court can straighten that out. But foundation counsel has to represent the entire board all the time, cannot have a history of having served one faction at the expense of another, and cannot have other ties and entanglements that give them really conflicts of interest. So it's a delicate question. I don't think there's a good answer to Janet's question, except that we'll just bobble along as we are doing and hire people to defend factions. But in no way can we think that Foundation Council has been hired for Pacifica yet. We just don't have it. We lost a terribly, terribly good, honest, and objective, unencumbered council, and we need to see if we can find anything like that again. Right now, we don't have that.
All right, Carolyn, thank you. Any other discussion about this motion?
Richard,
go ahead.
Yes, the council who quit recently because he wasn't being listened to came out of a pool that the council before that, from last year, I think, year before last, that pool had three people. They'd gone through a lot of process. The personnel committee had gone through a lot of process to vet those people. And we had three people in that pool, two of which have been used as corporate counsel. Isn't there a third person that's still on that list that is qualified and vetted already for us to consider?
Yes, there was. I heard some discussion of that. Has anyone checked to see if that person is still available? That might be a good substitute motion and be a lot quicker than going for.
Well, it probably wouldn't be good for us to ask that person, but you know, that's an executive director's
mm-hmm.
job. But
mm-hmm.
I thought there was a woman candidate that's just apparently just been gone past.
All right, thank you, Richard. So that's something to look into. If there's no other discussion, I'd like to move on to the next item on the agenda. However, we do not have a quorum today, so we are having a discussion. I just want everyone to know that our meeting this afternoon is being streamed. So voting on the motion is not something we can necessarily do in the, you know, given the circumstance that we don't have a quorum. However, I would like to hear from the seven board members on the call today if there are any objections to this motion. It might be helpful.
Point of information,
Janet Kay.
Jenna K. Point of Info. Well, yeah, there are eight. Not six.
And I have a point of information as well, Janice Lane.
I need your point of information?
Yes. All right, so I'm going to start with Janet Kay, Janice, and then Manajay.
Well, Janet Kay, I just was saying there are eight, not seven.
Oh, eight.
Oh, well, it's seven if you're not included.
Oh, thank you. Janice.
Point of information. Are we set on a definitive time? We announced that this meeting would be 1 hour, and then we moved into closed session. We are 3 minutes away from the time at which this is supposed to end. And my question is
actually, Janice, I'm sorry. Let me just interrupt here for a moment. The open session is for 2 hours, and the closed session is 1 hour. Yes, no problem. Manajay.
About 3-4 minutes ago, I checked whether 10 people on this call. So when we count eight only people, it was 10 people. Thank you.
Thank you.
One of them would be Summer, and maybe the other is the person streaming?
Bill
yeah,
Kosher.
That's right.
Bill Kosher. That's right.
I'm sorry. And it would also, I'm sorry for interrupting. Wouldn't it also include Luzette? Who needs to be added to the minutes as present?
Luzette as well.
Yes, okay. I'm here.
That makes eight.
Thank you. So I'm going to yes, thank you, Luzette, yes.
And Carolyn, please, again.
Yes, Carolyn, go ahead.
Yeah, to finish up, the protocol for when you're having a meeting and there is no quorum is to actually, you may take votes. They have to be ratified at the following meeting. But I would like to hear if anyone would like to either offer a substitute to the process by asking that third member who was vetted by the previous board if she is still available, or if people would just like to vote on this as it stands, or perhaps someone would make another motion to reconsider after we've consulted with that person. I don't know. What is the pleasure of people? I'm not quite sure what I'm hearing, if that's possible.
Is someone offering a substitute motion on this then to consider
Janet Kay, point of information.
Yes, Janet, go ahead.
Would this be a substitute or would it be an amendment to this? I
think it would be a substitute to the process, the interviewing timetable that is in this motion, but not the entire motion, just a substitute. Or we could make an amendment to consider this after we hear back from that third candidate.
Madam Chair,
Janice to the stack.
I'm sorry, Richard and then Janice?
Janice
Richard.
To the stack.
Richard and then Janice. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, I'd be willing to make an amendment that would say that the process be there, but amend it to after this third person, this final vetted person, has been contacted about possibly still being interested in the job.
So I'm going to have to ask you to repeat that. So what are you saying?
Janet Kay, could he also email it? Thank you.
Yeah.
I can't email it. I'm not at an email, but I'm sorry for that. It's essentially just prior to the process going into effect for any new consideration complete the pool that is already in existence.
Okay, so that's an amendment. Is that an amendment to Carolyn's motion?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll second that. If I can second
okay,
my own.
Being seconded. Okay. So, Janice, I had you on the stack.
Yes. And Richard addressed what I was going to speak to, so you can move on.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So, I guess we'll take a vote. Carolyn is recommending that we take a vote, and that it has to be ratified when presented to the full PNB. Is that correct? All right. So, Madam Secretary, if you would please call the roll.
On the amendment, Madam Chair?
On the amendment.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Okay. Brian Edwards Tiekert, Jose Luis Fuentes, Janet Coburn, I vote yes. Janet Coburn votes yes. Margie Wilkinson, Rodrigo Argueta, Lydia Berzon, Kim Kaufman, Lawrence Reyes, Adriana Casanova, Hank Lamb, George Ryder.
Abstain.
Richard Uzel.
Yes.
Carolyn Burden.
Yes.
Janet Coleman. Serene Roberts. Manajay Sabah.
Yes.
Jim Brown. Benito Diaz. Luzette King. Tony Norman.
Are
Heather
we talking
Gray.
About the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, abstain for now.
Okay. King abstain. Sorry, I haven't been repeating that. Heather Gray.
Yes.
Janice Lane Ewart.
Yes to the amendment.
Lane Ewart votes yes. And so let me see if there's somebody who is present who hasn't voted. Okay, so I count 6 yes and 2 abstain.
All right, thank you so much. And now we move to the main motion. Is that correct, as amended?
And that was no negative.
And
zero
and
no's.
Zero no's. Sorry.
Thank you.
All right, so Madam Secretary, we'll move to the amendment as amended. Okay, if you would call the roll, please.
Okay.
Motion.
Please give me a
motion.
Moment.
Thank you.
Please give me a moment. Okay. Brian Edwards Tiekert, Jose Luis Fuentes, Janet Coburn votes yes. Margie Wilkinson, Rodrigo Argueta, Lydia Berzon, Kim Kaufman, Lawrence Reyes, Adriana Casanova, Hank Lamb, George Ryder.
Abstain.
Ryder abstains. Richard Uzel?
Yes.
Uzel votes yes. Carolyn Burden?
Yes.
Burden votes yes. Janet Coleman? Serene Roberts? Manajay Sabah?
Yes.
Sabah votes yes. Jim Brown? Benito Diaz? Lizette King?
Yes.
King votes yes. Heather Gray?
Yes.
Gray votes yes. Janice Lane Ewart?
Yes.
Lane Ewart votes yes. So I have 7 yes, 0 no, and 1 abstain.
All right. Thank you so much, Madam Secretary. We'll now move on to the next item on the agenda, which is about a 5-year strategic plan. And I'm going to ask George Ryder to please express your views about this. I know you've had a lot of ideas about this, so please share them with us.
Well, do you want me to talk about the process I had suggested? It's actually a motion already on the agenda for, I guess, the 8th meeting on the 8th, but... Or to talk about my ideas of what it should be in terms.
I must apologize, George. I was not thinking of the motion. You have that motion in front of you.
No, but I can tell you pretty quickly what's on it.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us about the motion. Go ahead.
The idea was A, that we absolutely must address the central issue in front of us, which is what to do about declining listenership. it's got to be a strategic discussion because this is something that's been happening over years. We have to, well, you all understand that this has to be done. So my thought was the way to do it, so we can do it on telephone conversations and as well as on email, is to give everybody who's willing to write up a statement about it, or an idea about where you think we ought to go, to give them 5 minutes on the public meetings to discuss it. And then people who haven't done that can ask questions and so on. I think I scheduled it for an hour and a half the first time, but my sense was we would need to do that pretty much every meeting until we actually had some plan that we thought would actually work for doing what I suggested earlier, which is to turn around the slide in our listenership and hence the slide in our funds. So that was what the procedure is that's actually on the agenda.
Okay,
Janet Kay.
So we're going to have a discussion about this then. So Janet Kay and then Richard.
So and Carolyn on the track, please.
Based
on what I'm hearing, it sounds like the listener or declining listenership or an improvement in listenership would solve the problem. Is the only thing. I think the strategic plan should also include other factors like financial planning and financial controls and dealing with having being in compliance financially.
Janet to the stack.
All right, thank you. Thank you for that, Janet. I have Richard, Carolyn, and then Janet. Richard?
Yes, I'd like to applaud George for bringing this idea forward again. We've done it locally, and it just helped us a lot. And I think we had it scheduled for a whole three-hour session at the last in-person meeting, but that meeting got so enthralled with personnel matters that we didn't do anything for it. I hope that we support it and start looking toward the future.
Thank you, Richard. Carolyn, and then Janice.
Yeah, I appreciate Richard's task. That meeting didn't get installed with personnel matters. It got sandbagged with personnel matters. But be that as it may, this is a good plan, but I'm wondering if George has read any of the sustainability plans for WBAI in particular, many of which, of course, could be translated to the entire network, and looked at the suggestions there for increasing listenership and programming. There are some, and it seems a waste of energy to have parallel efforts going on. Perhaps we could figure out a way to coordinate George's proposal and the ones that have been put forward at BAI, which have national implications or elements in them that could be translated to the national. If we start completely new and we have the sustainability plans for WBAI just sitting there wasting away while the station is going downhill, I think that might be a little bit counterproductive. So what do you think about that, George?
Well, I mean, I think you have to have a venue for having the discussion, and what I was suggesting was a venue for that. Certainly any ideas that have already been worked through at BAI ought to be put into the mix there. This is certainly a network-wide problem. And to be specific, I haven't seen the stuff from BAI. We need to begin circulating those ideas, and this would be a way to do it, at least get started on doing it. So certainly, you know, one of the things should happen at the first meeting is somebody from BAI should present some of those.
Well, I thought that was on the agenda what we're going to do today, but we haven't, the committee at BAI itself hasn't coordinated enough to present it in writing, but that's basically what the plan was. And it distresses me that we're looking at the same thing, but we're not reading each other's work. That's kind of wasteful.